When you walk onto the University of Washington's Red Square, you are greeted by a giant statue of George Washington. A lot of students just walk past that statue, barely aware it's there. But for Palka Shabale, seeing that statue means something more.
In the black community, and the interactions that George Washington had with the black community was through slavery. And he is being worshipped and praised at the University of Washington because he was the first president of the United States.
Shabale is a senior studying molecular biology at the UW, and she helped organize a rally last week in solidarity with the students at the University of Missouri. You know, the University of Missouri has been in the news lately for the school's handling of racist incidents on campus. Here on the University of Washington campus, Shabale says this statue of George Washington off Red Square is one place where she feels erased as a student of color.
I feel as though black culture and the culture of African Americans in this country and even in Washington State, it doesn't really matter. We are kind of pushed away, and that's very disheartening. It already makes the campus a very daunting place because you're walking in to a predominantly white institution and you're already starting to face hostility when you're walking into the campus.
Do you feel physically unsafe, emotionally unsafe?
Emotionally unsafe, physically unsafe because of institutional racism, and I would say because of systemic oppression. And these educational systems and the way that they're set up don't really provide an environment of safety. Like, a lot of people don't really know about the effects of white supremacy and white privilege. And so when you walk into a classroom and you're a person of color and you're different, I'm a senior in molecular biology and I'm about the only face that looks like me that I see. Race is something that is never really talked about. And so when racial tensions occur, whether it's, you know, dealing with UW Greek fraternities and blackface and racial slurs that we hear from other students, it's not something that's addressed. People never really think about that because there's a differential treatment between white students and black students at the University of Washington.
What are some of those experiences that students talk about? What happens on the University of Washington campus?
In February, or I think it was in February, we had a very, very large walkout. And this was around the same time that there was a lot of controversy going on with SAE nationally. But we had that same problem here with UW-SAE.
This is a fraternity.
This is a fraternity, yeah. At the UW.
Sigma Alpha Epsilon.
Yes. And when we were marching right by their house, we were called racial slurs, the N-word. We were told, go back to Africa. We were called monkeys. There was also events that preceded that where two black women were physically assaulted by white fraternity males. We're not sure if they came from SAE specifically, but they were from the Greek system that we know for sure. And they were physically assaulted following the walkout. We have also had black students, specifically black women, who have been told that they are not allowed to go into fraternities or the sororities because they are too dark. People often think that these stories are isolated incidents. But if you talk to black students at the University of Washington, it's a very, very dominant thought. We know that it goes on because it's our friends and it's ourselves. And you don't see that. You know, people don't really tell you that. You have to go into these communities to know about that. We don't feel as though UW itself does enough to protect us and make sure that, you know, we feel safe going into these schools.
Yeah. Well, the University of Washington has put together some institutions that are supposed to be safe places. They have just created the Center for Communication, Difference, and Equity. There's the Intellectual House, the Native American Gathering Space. How safe are those spaces?
So those spaces, just actually, as you said, are still very, very recent, and we have yet to see how events will proceed with those. But I know, especially with the Intellectual House, that came from years and years of activism and protesting just to get the Intellectual House to be built. There are safe spaces for black students, like we've got the Black Student Union, the African Student Association, the Somali Student Association, Sisterhood, and these are clubs and groups on campus that are specifically there to address our unique experiences when we walk into the University of Washington.
So what more do you want the University of Washington to do?
It's not enough just to say we're going to create a safe space and that's kind of the end of it. You need to have diversity with equity, and I say with equity and not with equality, because you have to make sure that you're not just putting tokens, if I may. You're not just putting a center for differences and not really dealing with the issue, and the issue itself is systemic.
And what would be really dealing with the issue for the UW?
I think the entire system needs a revamping. The educational system, the way it's built itself, it's built to benefit white students more than it is to benefit black students. I can give an example. For example, history. When we learn about history, we learn about white history. We don't learn so much about black history, right? Right. When I go in to the University of Washington, if I want to learn about the history in the black community, I have to take that as an elective, right? It's not the dominant thing that you go in and you learn, for example. And then I could also give, for example, professors. I have never had a professor who's a person of color. Black students at the University of Washington make up 3%. Of the school, and in Washington State, affirmative action is actually illegal.
I'm talking with the molecular biology senior at the University of Washington, Palka Shibale, and I've been watching this conversation about race on campus, and one of the reactions I've heard is no student should have to feel unsafe or oppressed. But we also want students to learn to navigate a world full of stuff that we don't like and have to learn to live with. Where do you draw that line?
That's a very problematic view to have for me. It's not just about not liking something and having to navigate through. We're talking about this entire country has been built off our backs. And because of no other reason other than the fact that we are black people, we are being oppressed. And that's something completely different than saying, I don't like X, Y, and Z, but I have to navigate through it anyway.
Most of our listeners are not UW students. Faculty, staff, right? They're just going about their lives in the Northwest. What do you want people listening to this who are not involved with the University of Washington to think or do differently?
It's important to recognize the privileges that you have, whether racial privilege, economic privilege, religious privilege, and know that other people don't necessarily have that. And in my experience, talking with a lot of white people who don't exactly have a lot of experience in the black population or with situations affecting black people, there tends to be a lot of ignorance surrounding, you know, what's happening with Black Lives Matter or Black Students Matter. A lot of people will say, well, why do you need to protest, or why do you need to do this? And you have to understand that with our history in this country, we've never really had any kind of institutional system that's built to protect us. When we had the protest, the Seattle Police Department actually came in full force with riot gear, with what was a peaceful demonstration. That's what you continue to see with Black Lives Matter protests. You don't see that when we are mad, we lost a game, and then a lot of white students go and they ravage the city. Even the way the media portrays it is different. And so we are dehumanized in about every single aspect of life. Some of it is conscious, some of it is unconscious. And so what you're seeing right now is that we are fighting for the right to exist in liberty, things that aren't inherently given to us, but are given to people who don't have any melanin. And so we walk in this world a different way because we're treated a different way.
That's Palka Shibale, a senior studying molecular biology at the University of Washington. She was an organizer of the Solidarity with University of Missouri Black Students rally last week at the UW. Now, for another perspective on this, we are joined by Stephanie Smallwood, who is an associate professor of history at the University of Washington. Welcome, Professor.
Hi, thank you.
You also work with the UW's Center for Communication, Difference, and Equity, which we just heard about.
I do.
So first of all, what is your response? You just listened to Palka Shibale talk about her UW experience. How do you respond?
Mm-hmm. Well, just to kind of comment on the way you introduced me, I mean, I'm sad to say I don't think I can come here with a much of a different perspective than the one that Palka presented. I think that, you know, when black and brown students have to protest around safe space, it means that, you know, it's a wake-up call for us. It means that we have failed them, you know, arguably several times over, because the thing I want to really foreground is that protest is the last resort. You know, when I talk to students, and I actually ended up having dinner just last night with some other black women activist students on our campus who also were key organizers of the Solidarity with Mizzou march just last week. And they also told me really, really similar stories to the ones that Palka talked about in her interview. You know, these are students for whom racial microaggressions are a norm rather than an exception.
Microaggressions meaning stuff that they have to deal with that you may not even know is going on if you are not of color?
And microaggression, I think, is a complicated term, right? Because it can be taken to sort of say, you know, little things that shouldn't be a big deal. They're the things that are a big deal. I think we call them microaggressions because they do reflect the fact that arguably, and this is the question, right? Are we really there? Arguably, we want to tell ourselves that we're at a place where, you know, I was born in 65. I mean, I was born when we were just beginning to actually legislate Black admission to universities, right?
Yeah.
So we're no longer having to question, you know, we're no longer having to sue to even set foot on a campus. I think we wanted to think, when I was an undergraduate, I think we wanted to think, for instance, things like the N-word were off the table. Well, now the N-word is right back on the table. And the microaggression, I think, for Black and brown students is, you know, when we actually really legitimize a debate about use of the N-word under the guise of free speech. You know, when we legitimize the idea that there can be a good reason for someone to wear blackface for Halloween under the guise of freedom of speech. That's the kind of thing that for students is a microaggression. Mm-hmm. That, you know, on down to things like, you know, gee, can I touch your hair? I mean, there's all these ways in which students of color, you know, students around issues of sexuality, around ability, of all kinds of aspects of their being, you know, feel targeted in classrooms. And we're at a place where we're really not adequately equipped, oftentimes as faculty, as graduate students, TAs who also have responsibilities in classrooms, to sort of create an environment where students can know that those kinds of things will be addressed appropriately and that they can have a means of redress if they're not addressed appropriately.
Mm-hmm. And you said your position, your experience couldn't be more different from Pauka Shibale's? Is that what you
said? Well, I said, I mean, you introduced me as, you know, now for a different perspective.
Yes.
Right? Which can imply that, you know, here's someone who's going to have a kind of counter perspective.
All right. I see.
I can't counter her perspective. If anything, because I'm a historian of slavery, actually, I'm proud of Pauka, right? Because this is a student who's here as a sciences major, you know, who was thinking about history when she looks at the George Washington statue and is kind of saying, gee, how come nowhere in our mainstream education, you know, do we talk about George Washington's relationship to slavery? So a lot of what our students encounter in the classroom is, in fact, you know, the way in which we continue to miseducate, to sort of tell half truths about our history of race and white supremacy in the United States. So most of our students come to the University of Washington, you know, when they take my classes, Black, brown and white students and Asian students on slavery, they've never been told, you know, about Thomas Jefferson's, you know, ruminations on the need to remove Black people from the United States after abolishing slavery. They've never been told how much abolitionism in the 19th century was part and parcel with an anti-Black racism.
So what is on your list of action items? What should our biggest public university do? Both you and Pauka are saying we're not there. I think you said the university has failed its students. What's the to-do
list? This university, and that we have to also acknowledge, it's not just this university. That's the other thing that's creating a sense of urgency for our students, right? Why are they marching in solidarity with Mizzou? Because they realize that it's not just at UW, that whether they're here, whether they're at Mizzou, whether they're at one of the most elite universities in the country, Yale, right? The same problems are manifesting. So that's also part of the context in which students across the country are protesting, are saying there's something systemic going on here, and it's not isolated to this one campus or that one campus, that it's a national problem.
So in about the minute or so we have left, what should we do about it?
I think what we have to do is we have to recognize and address the wake-up call that we're not adequately addressing, first of all, how much conditions have worsened for students on campus in the last two decades. So today's college students, particularly our Black and brown students, are coming to campus, you know, having grown up in the era after Katrina, right? The era of the rollback, the anti-immigration and anti-affirmative action rollback, and what kind of climate that creates on campus. Their numbers have gone from pathetic to abysmal on campus. And on the flip side, you know, there is growing rhetoric about diversity. So I think our students come to campus and encounter a real paradox. Lots of lip service to diversity, but not much structurally. So I think we have to really put some more muscle from the top down around how do we make sure that faculty are adequately equipped to really respond to microaggressions, to recognize them, and to create a climate that says that's not okay. Does that mean, you know, thought police? Does that mean stifling debate? No, it doesn't. But, you know, it's a university. We have the sophistication to do this with nuance. If we can't do it here, we can't do it anywhere. So we have to do that. We have to do more things, I think, at the curricular level to make sure that students have adequate opportunities and adequate programming that really addresses questions of race and ethnicity. And I see you pointing to the clock.
Which means I'm so glad you're here. And can we do this again?
Absolutely.
Please.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Stephanie Smallwood, Associate History Professor, University of Washington, also works with the Center for Communication Difference and Equity there. KUOW's The Record. Thanks for tuning in.